Mahomes in the shotgun at the left hash mark. In motion, Jody Fortson right to left. Fake handoff to Pacheco. Backing up further is Mahomes. Guns it over the middle. Caught. 20-yard line. In the 15-yard line. Angling near side with a block. 10-5. Kelce stretches out for the end zone. Touchdown! Kansas City! Patrick Mahomes to Travis Kelce. 39-yard touchdown. Deep middle. And a great run after the catch by the best tight end in National Football League history.
And the Chiefs get it done. And Vegas knows what they're doing. Shockingly, the Chiefs didn't cover 15.5. Actually, it was 16.5. But if you bet early in the week, 14.5, 15.5, the Chiefs actually covered that. But 16.5 was what it was going into the game. And the Chiefs did not cover. Chiefs kick a lot of field goals. They win 26-10 over the shorthanded LA Rams. More on that coming up in a moment. Plus, we'll get to college football. K-State beating KU again when it comes to big-time football. And K-State moving on to the Big 12 championship game where they'll take on TCU. KU men's basketball team upset in the Bahamas. And the MIAA, their two remaining teams, are no longer remaining as they've both been eliminated. Nebraska has a new head football coach, and it's a guy that we mentioned for the very beginning. And somehow everybody was like, oh, yeah, he's not interested. He's not in the running. Next thing you know, oh, yeah, here he is. Yeah, there he is. There's Matt Rhule. He's the new head coach in Nebraska. We'll tell you what we think about all that. But first, high school football title game recaps.
Yes, the Thunder Ridge Longhorns finished as a state runner-up there in 8-man Division 2 on Saturday in Newton. Thunder Ridge led actually 28-24 midway through the second quarter, but Axel scored 52 straight points to win it 76-28 with 3:53 left in the third quarter. So a great run there for Thunder Ridge. Ends as a state runner-up with an 11-2 record. It's been an outstanding run for Axtell as they won their second straight state championship in 8-man Division 2. They've won 26 consecutive games after two straight 13-0 seasons for the Eagles. So again, Axtell, your state champs. Thunder Ridge runner-up in 8-man Division 2 on Saturday at Fisher Field in Newton. Other state championships, Little River and Wichita County. Wichita County winning 8-man Division 1 there, coming back to win over Little River. Cunningham winning 6-man, St. Mary's in 1A, Nemaha Central winning 2A, Andale in 3A. That was their 51st consecutive win for Andale, winning the 3A championship over Holton. Bishop Miege took 4A over Wamego, and then Mill Valley winning 5A for the fourth consecutive year, in Manhattan winning in overtime, making a stop on a two-point conversion to win the state championship over Gardner-Edgerton in 6A. So those are your state champs from the weekend in high school football. If you want to check out the full brackets or scores and everything as far as that's concerned, the brackets are at ncksports.com from high school state football.
Can I say I got one out of two predictions right over the long term? I got the Nebraska coach right, but I did not get the Thunder Ridge football game.
Hey, you were looking good there midway through the second. I was like, hey, they're hanging right in there. And then all of a sudden,
Axel scored 32 points in that second quarter in a span of not very many.
No, it wasn't very long.
It just completely blew up in Thunder Ridge's face, unfortunately. Because I didn't get to see the game, but and I'm not really going to pay their subscriptions for NFHS. I have my feelings about all that. I got updates and this and that, and it was 28-24. Next thing I knew, it was 52-28 or something like that. Right. 56-28. Like, what in the world? But, yeah.
Yeah, I was listening to it on my way from Waukini to Manhattan, and it was very interesting to start, obviously. But
couldn't keep up.
One thing that went the wrong way, and then you knew that it was going to be tough because Axtell kept getting the ball back before halftime, and they got a couple more scores stacked on, and they got the ball to start the second half, and it's like, oh man, such a great start, and then just boom, it hits you so fast when it goes the wrong way.
Well, I think we all got the, except for Jason, we all predicted the champions correctly, except you said Little River, I think. And I think you said Little River. We got that one wrong, actually. Wichita County.
That's the only one that any of us really kind of got wrong. Yeah. I knew that would, honestly, that was the hardest one for me to pick out of all of them, just based on the matchup going in. That and maybe Kingman, Nemaha Central, because I didn't know how that would play out. But, we picked Nemaha Central to win it. But
I didn't think that one was that hard, personally. I thought St. Mary's Inman was harder than that. I did. Yeah. Nemaha Central, I just didn't think Kingman could.
And that one ended up being closer than I thought. Actually, St. Mary's Inman
Well, let's talk about that game. Did you know what happened in that game? Yeah. Inman was going in for a two-score lead and was going to win a state title, and they fumbled at the one. And St. Mary's went on a 99-yard drive and scored the game-winning touchdown with 13 seconds left.
Yeah.
And I feel, I don't know who the kid was, what happened, whose fault it was on a fumble, but I feel horrible for that kid because they were that close to winning a state title, and then, boom, the other team goes 99 yards.
Yeah. Although, I would say you win as a team, you lose as a team. You know, the fumble obviously is a big deal, but you had 99 yards to... Yeah,
defense could have stopped them, but that's not going to make the person that fumbled feel any better.
No,
I know if
not.
It were me, I'd feel horrible.
Yeah.
Be like, we got all that way, we're 1 yard away from, you know, wrapping her up, and that happened. So, I've covered teams where they were so close to winning state titles on more than one occasion, and just one little tiny thing could change everything. And unfortunately for Inman, but fortunately for St. Mary's, that's what happened. Andale wins 28-0. Mill Valley won. Miege won 35-14. Amigo. I mean, there was really no surprises. Nemaus Central really handled Kingman. I've been trying to tell people Nemaha Central's size. I mean, just look at their running backs. Those are linemen, but they run really well. I mean, the Hike kids, especially Cooper, he's a stud, and he had four touchdowns in that game. And Kingman had not seen anybody like that all year long. That's why I thought Nemaha Central, I don't know. I just always thought Nemaha Central was going to win this thing before the season even began. I heard so much about Southeast because of where we're at, but I was like, I know Nemaha Central. I know how well they're coached. I know some of the studs they've got, and I still got some connections up there. And I was just like, you know, I think Nemaha Central, it's their title to lose. Go ahead. I'm sure they're happy to be ranked second all year long behind Southeast. That's fine. Don't mean nothing. You got to play it out anyway. So Nemaha Central wins the title there over Kingman. Kingman had a heck of a year. It'd been 50 years since they'd been in a state title game. Yep. Nixon was in office as president of the United States. How was Thanksgiving? Good?
Great, yeah. Had a chance to see some of the family and got around a lot of different places and had a great weekend, yeah.
Awesome. Well, broadcast schedule this week. We get right back into basketball.
Yeah, we're going to get wrestling and basketball. We'll have wrestling locker room chats. We'll start things off tomorrow about 5:15. We'll get those things started. We talk with the coaches of Beloit, Osborne, and Smith Center in wrestling. And then basketball will start on Wednesday with Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge. And then Thursday we'll talk with the coaches of St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas. So we're looking forward to that, 5:15 each night. And then Friday night we open the high school basketball season with Beloit at Concordia on Katy Country 94 and NCKSSports.com online video stream, the Beloit Trojan Channel. And on Z96 through the lake, the Lakeside Knights open out the season at Tescott. Pregame coverage for all that beginning around 5:50 on Friday and tip off at 6 o'clock for the girls' games, the boys' games to follow. We're sliding into basketball on Friday night to get the season started.
Absolutely. We had a chance. We went up Saturday to visit Kyler Burks up at Madonna Rehab Center. We'd wanted to do that for a while, but our schedule didn't really suffice or work. And there's one time we were up there, and then they had something he had been transferred to Omaha, so they weren't able to take visitors at that time. And so we were able to finally get up there. And Kyler's made a lot of progress from his accident happened back in June. Continue to keep them and the family in your prayers, as it's a long, 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 long process. It's over 5 months now. And he is making improvements, and he certainly acknowledged that we were there, and we were chatting with him and chatting with his mom, and dad was home 103 degree temperature or something, six. So they didn't want him to spread anything to anybody, so that kind of messed up that part of it for Thanksgiving. But the Burks have been through a lot, so that's just a bump on the radar when it comes to everything else. And so Kyler is improving, slow but steadily, and we continue to wish them nothing but the best in recovery from that. All right, the Chiefs beat the Rams 26-10. Rams without Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp. Chiefs hold them to 198 yards. Two takeaways, Nick Bolton interception, Jarius Sneed interception late. Chiefs two turnovers of their own, 437 yards in offense. Mahomes finished the day with 320 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. Here is Mahomes. Overall thoughts on the win.
I thought defense played well, some special teams, some offense we got to clean up. The defense kept us in the game, got some turnovers for us, got some big stops after some turnovers that we made. But especially in the red zone, we got to execute at a higher level. I got to execute at a higher level, and I got to stop. I got to take out like the one dumb play I make every game, it seems like. So if I can take that out, I think we'll be all right.
Okay, let's talk about this. Is going to be, first of all, I told somebody there are a few Chiefs fans that were annoyed or complaining about the Chiefs not doing enough yesterday, and they won by 16. In NFL, you win by 16, that's like a blowout. So this is how spoiled we become as Chiefs fans. We're not happy when the Chiefs hold the other team to 10 points. I mean, seriously, that's where we—that's where we've gotten. We're so caught up, and I understand the frustration. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's frustrating for the Chiefs to get in the red zone multiple times and kick field goal after field goal after field goal. I totally get it. I totally get it. But this defense is better, so we don't have to score as many points as we've done in the past. You're playing against a third-string quarterback, all right? And he had never played in the NFL before. So he's nervous, and he's not a great passing quarterback, and that was a lot for him to take in a hostile environment. So the Chiefs didn't need to score touchdowns yesterday, really, to win this game. They didn't have to. Now, they're going to have to this Sunday in Cincinnati against the Bengals, who will probably have Joe Mixon back at running back. They'll have Ja'Marr Chase back at wide receiver. And the Bengals beat the Titans this weekend without either one of those guys. They're playing some good football. And we know the Bengals had the Chiefs number both times a year ago, including the AFC title game. So, having said that, let's nitpick a little bit, right? That's what we are. I mean, otherwise, what's the point? Let's just move on to the next subject. Mm-hmm. But let's do talk about this. First of all, I'm not concerned at all with the Chiefs offense settling for field goals. I'm not concerned because I think the Chiefs play to their level of competition. I just believe that's what they do. They also, when they think they're better than the other team, they get cute inside the red zone with the tricky pass by Sky Moore back to Mahomes, which in fairness, if Mahomes throws it to the guy that's open, instead of fixating on number 87, Travis Kelce, that is a touchdown. Go back and watch it.
There's
Watson's
wide open.
Justin Watson's wide open. Yep. That's Mahomes, and this is one thing we've talked about, how great Mahomes is at spreading the ball around. But after that recent game, he talked about, well, anytime man-to-man coverage, I'm giving Kelce a shot. Listen, if Kelce ain't open, you shouldn't be giving him a shot.
Yeah.
And he wasn't. I mean, he was open, but he threw it late. So that trick play didn't work. And then he had a boneheaded interception. And listen, I'm not sitting here, for all of you that are listening, oh my gosh, you're going to pick on Mahomes today? Of all people, you're going to pick on the golden child? Listen, Mahomes is a great player. He makes mistakes. Tom Brady makes mistakes. Josh Allen makes mistakes. Jalen Hurts makes mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. So we can talk about a few of these by Mahomes yesterday. And Mahomes said, I got to eliminate that boneheaded play that seems to be every game. I don't know if it's every game, but it was a boneheaded play yesterday. He tried to force it to number 87 again. Now, that's a little bit scary to me because I don't want him fixated on 87 more than he has in the past, because I think what's great about the Chiefs offense is that they have various weapons. So yesterday, Juju didn't play a lot. He played some, had a few catches. Sky Moore had a few catches. Kelce had a few catches. He got Noah Gray a couple of catches. I mean, he spread it around. 10 different receivers. They even threw it Pacheco, which I thought was a nice little wrinkle to the offense, and he made a nice catch. And if you get him in open space, look out.
Rojo had a catch yesterday.
Rojo had a catch, too, for 17 yards. So they got everybody involved. Fortson had a couple of catches. Scantling was involved. Juju was limited. There was no Kadarius Toney. But yet, it is a little bit concerning that Mahomes tried to force it to Kelce twice. And one could have been a touchdown and he threw it sooner, but there's another guy wide open, and he missed him. And then the one where he threw the interception, I mean, there was nothing there. He just locked on to Kelce. Here is Mahomes on that interception.
I was going to throw it to Trav, and then at the last second, I didn't think I could get it in. It was one of those, like, I tried to pull it down a little bit, and I threw it directly into the dude's stomach. So just got to make sure that I don't do that, especially in the red zone, because those are ones that kill you in big games. And so obviously you'd like to win, but we got a lot to get better at offensively, especially starting with me.
Well, and Andy Reid says there's something to the red zone offense's struggles.
We're not playing a JV team. That defense is one top 10 defense. So, I mean, you know, it's not like they're no good. So they did a nice job against us. And, you know, that's all part of it. But in between red zones there, we sure moved the ball well. But a lot of good things happened there.
So this is how spoiled Chiefs fans have become, and I am one of those. We're all guilty of this, so I'm not singling out anybody. We're all guilty of it. We're screaming and hollering at Sky Moore muffing a punt for the third time this year.
I'm hollering at Dave Tobe for that, not Sky Moore.
Yeah, that's Sky Moore put in a tough situation. Now, one thing that should be pointed out is Sky Moore was punt returner start the year, but then it was Mecole Hardman. He's hurt. Then it was Kadarius Toney. He got hurt. So Moore is a third-string punt returner, and that was who they went with because he has returned punts more than anybody else this year besides those other two that are hurt. Having said that, people told me, like, well, dear Lord, anybody could be back there and catch it. I'm like, you want Chris Jones back there? I mean, no, not anybody. Not anybody. I love when people throw out the generic stuff like that. Like, tell me who you want back to return punts if it's not Sky Moore. Now, Trent McDuffie would be my choice, but he's a starting corner that you don't want to get hurt. Sky Moore's not a starting wide receiver, although Hardman has. Tyreek Hill returned punts and kicks before, and he's a starting receiver. You don't want Pacheco. Pacheco hasn't returned punts, I don't think, in his career. So you don't want a guy that doesn't have experience returning punts. Although, in fairness, Sky Moore didn't return punts in college. So why the Chiefs are doing that, I don't understand.
Yeah.
But I do understand why Sky Moore is out there yesterday. Like, all these people are like, why are we still doing this? Well, because the first two guys that returned punts are hurt. So he went to a guy that's had the most reps as a punt returner. Now, to Sky Moore, I think it's between the years. Okay? And then Justin Watson comes in, and his job is just to catch the ball. And I said this to my friend Cody. We were going back and forth on this. And I said, listen, the best punt returner is to not put anybody back there.
Yeah,
don't put anybody back there.
Doing anything.
Just give up returning the punt. I know that sounds crazy,
but the Chiefs offense?
Yes. But this offense, the worst thing you can do is return the punt and get penalty and further back, or, of course, turn the ball over. And Sky Moore's done that three times this year. The Sky Moore returning punts experiment should be over for this year. It should be over. He shouldn't return a punt ever again this year. Maybe in the future, and maybe he figures it out, fine. Now, in fairness, Justin Watson, the one that he caught, was a pop fly that was as easy as anything possible. Sky Moore's was a line drive lower kick that he was coming up on. So when I hear people say, see, it's not that hard. Well, Justin Watson might have made the same mistake Sky Moore did. That was not nearly as tough to return a punt. It was a fair catch, and Watson knew it was a pop-up. I said, and my oldest son and I argued about this a little bit. I said, I'm not trying to make excuses to Sky Moore, but come on. Sky Moore's punt return was more difficult than Justin Watson's. Don't sit here and tell me Justin Watson's a full-time punt returner now. I mean, he was laughing after he caught it. Because in baseball, if you have a pop-up to the second baseman, that's an easy play. If it's a ball into shallow right field, and the second baseman's got to go back to make a play, should he make it? Probably. Is it harder? Yes. There's a higher degree of difficulty. So I love what you just said, because Dave Tobe is at fault for that. And Andy Reid eventually signs off on it as well. So I think that experiment is over. Sky Moore is done returning punts. Just put somebody back there that calls a fair catch automatically and then goes and catches it. Or if he thinks he can't get it, get the heck out of the way, let the ball bounce 18 yards, so what, and let the Chiefs offense go out there. The worst possible thing you can do is do what Sky Moore did for the third time this year. Give up a possession. Luckily, you're going against a team that isn't very good offensively without all their stars on offense. You do that against the Bengals, it'll cost you. It cost them against the Colts, and it would cost them against the Bengals. We can't have that going forward.
At least the first go around. I wonder if it was a way for him to get a few touches of the football to feel involved. When you had all the healthy receivers and everything, he wasn't going to see the field as much. You know, he was out there sometimes. So I think, that was early. And then here this week, a couple injuries, so he tried to fill in again. Catching punts is not the easiest
thing in
the world.
It isn't easy, although as a pro, you should be able to catch
them.
You know, for us, it's not easy, but Sky Moore should catch them. He shouldn't. I mean, if you muff one, fine, but not three. And then the very next drive, Sky made a very difficult catch on a throw that was not that great by Mahomes.
Yeah, I'm just glad that's not carrying over on his offense when the struggles that he does have over there.
Yeah. And Sky Moore, what's funny is one of the biggest things they said about him is the most sure-handed receiver coming out of college. And he is, but he's not a sure-handed punt returner.
Yeah.
That's
when,
for sure.
When a rocket's coming at you on a line drive,
on a
route while you're receiving the football, it's a little bit different than the different way it's going to come off of a foot further down the field, and it's coming at you, not in rhythm, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Mecole Hardman's muffed punts before. I mean, Tyreek Hill's muffed one in the divisional game against the Texans, almost killed the Chiefs.
When Mecole started doing it, there were times that they had to take him out and put Tyreek back in when they didn't want to.
Right.
And so, I mean, there's guys that they've had back there that not everybody's good at it, but you got to identify that quickly. And if there's issues there, then you want to go away from it. And again, to be fair, they did go away from it, but Mecole and Tony, you're both hurt, but it's wild for me on weekends because I'm watching Special Teams U on Saturday and what I'll call is Special Teams PU on Sunday most of the time this year for the Chiefs. It's not been good.
No, it hasn't. I mean, Townsend's been good. Butker's been inconsistent, but been hurt, but been was good.
Yeah,
yesterday.
That part of it's okay. But
the kicking game,
okay,
the other but stuff return units are not good.
Return units and even coverage sometimes. And this is like, what are we doing out here?
Yeah, that's something that you got to watch out for. That might cost the Chiefs in a postseason game. It definitely needs to be cleaned up. Now remember, they got a lot of young guys playing these spots, and I thought it would get better, and I think it still will. But you can't be muffing the punt return, and that's three times. So that experiment, I think, is over. Now let's talk about Mahomes. You know, there were plays yesterday when I'm watching Mahomes where he still, I mean, there's times he'll take the check down, there's times where he doesn't. And he rolls away from what was an easy pass. I don't know how many times I counted at least three times yesterday. Rojo was one, and McKinnon was two. And Pacheco, I think, one time, where he rolled right because he felt some pressure. But had he just thrown it back over the left side, he's got a guy open by 15 yards.
Yeah.
And then he shortens the field by rolling right. Now, granted, he rolls right. A lot of deadly things happen in a good way for the Chiefs. But I just feel like he fixated on Kelce too much yesterday at times. Even the one that he looked like was going to be a touchdown where he rolled right near the end zone, got deflected, luckily not into the air, and picked off. And so I do have a few concerns with Mahomes because we saw this in the AFC title game last year in the second half where he had guys open and he didn't throw it. And I know I don't want him to be check down Charlie. I really, truly don't. At the same time, take what the defense gives you. And that has been the knock on the Mahomes and the Chiefs the last year and a half is defenses are saying, you're going to have to methodically work it down the field. We don't think you're patient enough to stick to the running game. We don't think you're patient enough to check it down. And there's times where Mahomes does, and there's times where he doesn't. And it is a little bit inconsistent. Now, having said that, that's being nitpicky. He's having an MVP type of season, no doubt about it. And then Pacheco ran the ball pretty well yesterday. He's clearly the number one back. That's probably a good thing. Rojo looked okay in the limited time he was out there. It was good to see him on the field after being healthy scratched throughout the season. But are you concerned at all with Mahomes maybe focusing on Kelce a little too much? Is that just a one-game thing maybe? I mean, are any concern with Mahomes in maybe leaving the pocket a little prematurely? There were times where he had to. I mean, the Rams did have a pretty decent pass rush. Orlando Brown, once again, got beat multiple times. Orlando Brown, he wasn't even going up against a great pass rusher. There are times when Mahomes steps up in the pocket. He's done a better job of that this year, hanging in there. But there's still those times where I think he feels the ghost and he runs. And that's okay because he's very smart in how he runs. When he gets outside the pocket, he usually can hurt you quite a bit. Although yesterday he didn't hurt the Rams nearly as much by rolling out of the pocket as he normally does. Any concerns at all?
I think that's always a concern for me. It's kind of
it's a gunslinger.
We talk about
now,
the double-edged sword, right? Yeah. That this is exactly what this is right here with Mahomes. It's like you want him to take that check down, but how many times have you seen him get out of the pocket
and get the
roll
big play
out and get some kind of big play that nobody's ever seen until that point, right? And I think that I think what we see with Mahomes right now is the after effects of how easy it looked for him sometimes when he started his career. Like how these kind of plays that nobody ever makes, that right. nobody else in the league was making, and nobody made it before that time either.
Right.
He made all that, and the one I always come back to is the 49ers one, right? The one when he's going to the far sideline, he turns around and comes back to the near sideline and just rockets a pass to Chris Conley.
Yep.
And that's the first one that I remember, and he had that success on those kind of plays, and sometimes he thinks he can make those plays every single play.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's what makes him great, but it also sometimes gets him in trouble.
And you never want him to not have that mentality.
Yeah,
but you also do want him to not have that mentality as a fan because it's like, get him. The one I saw was Rojo. He's just wide open in the flat. And Mahomes is already turning toward the far sideline. And Rojo's just sitting by himself over here. Mm-hmm. Has like probably 10 to 15 yards down the sideline before anybody's even close to him.
Right.
And so, and McKinnon did it in the second half with a very similar play. And so, but then there's one where he overleads McKinnon on an easy play that's going to give 10 to 15 yards too. And some of those plays happen when he's going out in the flat too. And I don't know if that gets in his mind too or what might be the case there.
I'm glad you brought that up because I do think that is one throw that Mahomes really struggles with. And it should be easy. It's so weird, but sometimes that happens. You make the hard play and then you don't make the simple play. He lobbing it out to a running back sometimes, Mahomes is not very accurate. I mean, he's had wheel routes this year where he let Hilaire into the sideline and out of bounds. downs on a play where he was wide open for a touchdown. I'm not saying these are easy passes. The one to McKinnon was easy yesterday. He overthrew him, threw it behind him. He threw another one to McKinnon that was behind him, and McKinnon made a nice adjustment and a catch. So that's just maybe something Mahomes got to work on. And I'm granted he doesn't want to dump it out in the flat all the time, but those balls are not thrown as well as they need to be thrown so that you can get those bigger yardage chunks or at least set your running back up into getting yards after contact and making some plays because he's got to jump up high to get it or have to adjust in midair or it's behind him. That's something Mahomes can improve in. There's no doubt about that. I still go back to the second half of the Bengal game where I don't want him to be gun-shy. In the second half of the game last year, he was. I mean, after the whole thing happened at halftime, when they wasted and left 3 points on the field, and once again, I thought that was the right decision, but don't run a play short of the goal line is the dumb part of it. Whether that was Hill's fault, Andy Reid's fault, Eric Bieniemy's fault, Patrick Mahomes' fault, whatever. The bottom line is the team's fault, and it cost him. Second half, he looked like a guy that was worried about making a mistake. He did not let it fly, and we're sitting here.
Except for one time that he shouldn't have let it fly. Right?
And so we're sitting here, and we're saying, we don't want Mahomes to be check down Charlie. We want to be aggressive. And he wasn't aggressive in the second half against the Bengals. There were guys open. People talk about, oh, the Bengals, unbelievable change in defense and do this and do that. No, they dropped 8. They rushed 3. There were guys open. Mahomes didn't throw it to the guys that were open. Whether he had stage fright, but Mahomes was a completely different guy in the second half last year against the Bengals. I don't know what happened to him other than I think he was big time shook from what happened at halftime. And then he felt like, okay, I'm not going to cost us any points the rest of the way. And they only scored 3 the rest of the way. I don't want him. So this ties in to the discussion.
Yeah.
I don't want Mahomes to think that, oh, I got to check down instead of making plays, because I felt like that's what happened the second half last year, and I think it cost the Chiefs a Super Bowl appearance. And so I don't want to be too nitpicky and saying, well, Mahomes, you had guys in the flat yesterday that you could have dumped it off to instead of rolling right, trying to look and make a big play, because he's very capable of doing that. So you're right. It's a double-edged sword, because you don't want to take – he's got the gunslinger in him. He's been tamed a little bit, no doubt. He's nothing like Brett Favre. Anybody – stop with the comparisons to Brett Favre. Those are so way in the past. I mean, he was not a turnover machine in college. Go look it up. 83 touchdowns, 18 interceptions. That's a pretty amazing ratio with one of the worst defenses he had every single year at Texas Tech. He hasn't had a great defense yet in Kansas City, and maybe never will. Okay, he's had a decent one when they went to the Super Bowl towards the end of the year. It was horrible the first 10 games, and he had a defense this year that seems to be better. So he doesn't have to do as much. Which then you say, okay, well, if he doesn't have to do as much, then he needs to check it down a little bit more. But if you check it down to where that's what he does, and he leaves guys open down the field and he doesn't throw the ball like he used to, now we've negated the greatness of Patrick Mahomes. And so I think it is a double-edged sword, and that's why I want to be very careful not to be too nitpicky into, hey man, he's wide open the flat, throw it in the flat. Now I will say this, if it's 3rd down and 3, instead of looking for the big play, let's take the easy first down. Yeah. I will say that. Yeah. But otherwise, I mean, is he going to make a bad throw from time to time? Yeah, he's human. He's human. Every quarterback in this league does it and done it over their career. And Mahomes has not been a turnover machine in the National Football League. He's not broken, but he did not play his best game yesterday. We can sit here and say, well, he had 320 yards passing, a touchdown interception. Here's the other part of the whole people being spoiled thing. I think there's a lot of Chiefs fans that think that the other team isn't trying. the other team has professional athletes paid millions of dollars.
The Rams defense
yes,
yesterday.
Right. The Rams defense has actually been pretty good this year. It's that their offense has been hurt.
Just inept because they're hurt.
Yeah. No OBJ, they hope to have him back. Torn ACL in the Super Bowl. Cooper Kupp now out with ankle surgery. Allen Robinson's been a bust as a free agent wide receiver. They traded Robert Woods. That's a mistake looking back at it. They don't have a running game. Their offensive line's been banged up. Their defense has been pretty much intact for the most part, but they did lose Vaughn Miller, right? So yeah. Aaron Donald is the highest paid defensive player in the league. That guy's pretty good. Okay, the Rams have players. Now, Kelsey made Jalen Ramsey look like a fool on that touchdown pass that we played earlier. But the Rams are really good defensively. And so I think Chiefs fans easily forget that, the Chiefs still put up 26 and they settled for field goal after field goal. They had over 400 some yards of offense against a really good defense, and Chiefs fans are stuck on, well, we got field goals instead of touchdowns. And against defenses aren't as good, the Chiefs are going to get touchdowns instead of field goals. And the Rams' offense was inept, so you don't need to score 50. And I'm okay with the Chiefs saving their best for next week against Cincinnati on the road. And by the way, even if the Chiefs lose to the Bengals, and we stated this last week, even if the Chiefs lose at the Bengals, don't freak out, Chiefs fans. I know it'll be something in the Chiefs fans' head that we can't beat the Bengals. We're 0-3. Mahomes can't beat Burrow. But even if the Chiefs don't beat the Bengals this weekend, the Chiefs will be favored in every game after that. And if they win out, they'll be the number one seed anyway. The Chiefs have room for error here. Mm-hmm. They really, truly do. Now, I think they're going to play much better offensively next week. I do wonder, the defense is going to be severely tested if Chase is back healthy. But Chiefs fans are so spoiled. Like, we said it before the season, the Chiefs are going to have to win a little bit differently this year. They're not going to put up, they're not going to be 48, 45, 51, 48 boat races because the defense is better. And that's a great thing. And The offense isn't going to go nuts all the time. They've been great against the Buccaneers, great against the Niners. They've had some games. The Titans, they struggled. They struggled against the Colts. They struggled against the Rams yesterday, but still put up 26 points. And 26 points should be enough to win in this league if you got a decent defense, especially against a third-string quarterback. So I think, Chiefs fans, we're too overly spoiled. One, we forget the other team gets paid to play, too. It's not like this isn't the Harlem Globetrotters playing the Washington Generals, and the Generals are supposed to play as tough for a while. No. The Rams have great defensive players. And the Chiefs are going to face a team that has really great offensive players this upcoming Sunday in Cincinnati. The other team tries too. Keep that in mind. Second of all, your Chiefs fans are so caught up in we settle for 3 points every time. But when your defense holds the other team to 10, field goals are okay.
Yeah.
I mean, what's lost in all this is the defense, and I know the Rams are inept, don't get me wrong. But this defense is better. I'm not saying this defense is top 10, but it is better. It is better. And I think a lot of fans overlook it because Andy and the Chiefs don't have to be as aggressive on offense if they don't want to be when the defense is playing well. You play to the strengths or what phases are playing well. And you know, that's what happened in the Colts game. Fake field goal because they didn't believe in their kicker. That changed everything, right? Yeah, you play to the phases, whether they're going bad or good. You know, I had this conversation with somebody yesterday. Man, it takes such guts to go for two and try to win a football game. The Jaguars did it yesterday. The Chargers did it. They both came out smelling like roses. They went for two in the win. I said, listen, it's not courageous. It's smart. Go for two in the win. But here's the thing. It's got to be based on game situations. Don't go by pure analytics. But if your defense is struggling, you should go for two and win the game. Now, if your defense is playing great, I would suggest you keep the extra point and you go to overtime because your defense is playing great. But if your defense is playing poorly, then yes, you end it in overtime. Or if you are the underdog and you know you're not as talented as the other team, see LSU against Alabama and other situations, see the Jags against the Ravens yesterday. Yes, you go for two. And so the same thing applies to the Chiefs. If the defense is playing really well, there's no need for the Chiefs to be airing it out every single play when you know the other team, the only way you're going to hurt yourself is to turning the ball over.
Right. Yeah, the thing for me on that yesterday is like there was no time in my mind that I felt the Chiefs were in any kind of trouble or anything like that. I knew who was playing on the other side on offense, right? But that's a game, as the spoiled Chiefs fan, it should be 35-10 when it was 20-10. At least, right?
True.
Like that's the spoiled Chiefs
that's
fan
the
mentality
spoiled Chiefs
of
fan.
This game should have been over a long, long time ago. We shouldn't even be thinking about anything. It shouldn't be a 10-point game in the fourth quarter, right? Like that's what's in my mind as a Chiefs fan. When the Rams it's 20-3, then they go score, make it a 10-point game, and I'm like, this game should not be 10 points right now. So that's when it goes into your mind. And then those kind of plays that you have where you do the double pass when you're inside the five and you know, whether that was Mahomes' fault or a bad play call, whatever it is, it's like in a game like this when points have been a little bit hard to come by for you, why don't you just run when you've got the ball on first and goal with the four instead of doing these weird things where you've now put yourself, by the time Mahomes throws the pass, he's outside the 15.
Yeah.
Oh, like you've taken 10 yards away from your process. You've given your team, I don't understand a double pass by the goal line, first of all, because you're
well, in fairness,
less
there was a receiver wide
there
open.
Was.
If he throws it,
again,
they executed it. It's a touchdown.
Again,
in fairness, that's on Mahomes.
It was the Mahomes execution, but no matter what it is, the play didn't work. And he made a mistake of the way that they did it. I just don't like taking away yardage moving back, and there's not a lot of room to work there. So those things that in a game, like you said, game situations, right? Like if you go for two and things like that. This game situation is like, let's just go get some points here because they've been hard to come by today. And then the next play he's throwing an interception, the drive's over. And so it's frustrating because it's like, let's go ahead and get these points here.
I'm with you. I don't like the cuteness inside the 20 sometimes or inside the 10. I get it. Having said that, it was the right play call.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was open.
I mean, we're going to go back to this again. Yeah. Coaches can call the exact right play, and the players don't execute it. That's not the wrong play call. Yeah. That's bad execution by the players that are trying to execute the play. And Watson was open, and he locked on to Kelsey. That was a touchdown. And if Mahomes throws to the open guy, we're not saying anything about that play today. We're not.
Probably not.
We're not.
Right.
No, we're going, well, that was pretty smart because we'd struggled in the red zone. We couldn't run it in
for
a touchdown.
We're not going to criticize the play.
No, we're not. Of course you're not. But my point is, you're sitting here saying, well, run the ball, get the points. Well, they were getting 3 points. They were trying to get a touchdown. They weren't able to run it in for a touchdown, really. I mean, they had a rushing touchdown. But they weren't. The Rams knew towards in the fourth quarter the Chiefs trying to run it in for a touchdown milk clock. All right? The Chiefs ran various plays and couldn't score a touchdown throughout the game in the passing game except for a 39-yarder. That was not red zone offense.
Yeah.
So then the red zone offense, they were, what, was one of six in regards to touchdowns, and they settled for 4 or 5 field goals? Now, Andy's going, well, maybe we've got to mix it up here and do something different, give them a different look. And there it was. It was trickeration. It was cuteness, sure. But based on the Chiefs, what they had been doing prior to that against in the red zone, it hadn't been working.
Yeah.
Hadn't been working. So I'll back up Andy on that one because it was open. Right. And they had been struggling inside the red zone there. And you're not going to give it to Pacheco 3 straight times.
Right.
First of all, I don't even know if that's going to work because the Chiefs in short yardage aren't very good. And secondly, Andy, you know, isn't going to run it 3 straight times when it's first and goal at the 5.
And I'm not asking him to do that, right, but run it on first and goal at the 4.
Well, the best time to run play action is first and goal. Play action. I would say more play action instead of the trick play.
Right.
But it was wide open.
Yeah. I do think there's something to kind of force feeding Kelsey overall as a big picture. In a weird way, the success of the last 3 or 4 weeks with all these touchdowns kind of led to yesterday's, you know, why not try to keep Kelsey on a roll? And that might
Mahomes
be.
Mahomes said Kelsey's the greatest tight end
right,
of all time.
Yeah. So, yeah, there might have been a little bit of that. I do think Andy Reid may have coached this game a little bit different, too.
Oh, he did.
There might have been a couple. He goes for it in different situations. But he just knew that if he just keeps putting points on the board, that Rams team isn't going to win. And so I think that might have played a little bit into it. And, you know, the Mahomes red zone interception, yeah, you can't have that one. That one's bad. But it's going to happen every once in a while with anybody. But you just hope it's not in a big game. So, yeah, it wasn't the cleanest game in the world. But, you know, big picture, if you're, you know, worried that bad about a 26-10 win, I don't know what to.
I mean, that's the thing. You won by 16 in NFL, which is a blowout in NFL standards. Okay.
Yeah.
You held them to 10, and people are complaining about you not scoring enough points. You scored 16 more than the other team. That's 15 more than you needed.
And I never felt.
You know what it is? It's the sexiness of what the Chiefs used to have. And we tried to prepare people that this year there are going to be times the Chiefs are going to look great, but they're going to do it in a different way. They're not going to have the 3-play, 80-yard drive with a 69-yard pass to Tyreek Hill every drive. It's just not. And Mahomes is going to run around, scramble 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and throw a no-look pass to get a 4th-down and 10 against the Ravens. That might happen from time to time, but it's a different type of offense in regards to how they are going to methodically, if the Chiefs are just patient, even when they have penalties, they overcome them.
Yeah.
If the Chiefs are just patient and Mahomes takes what the defense gives him, and there's times where he sometimes doesn't, but if they do that, I think this team offensively is unstoppable, except the turnover. Right.
And like Dusty said it, there was never a time where the Rams were a threat to win that football game. And that's all you can ask for.
Right.
In any game. And sometimes, I mean, there's a lot of times you have, even if it's a third stringer, that if this guy can run, maybe he makes a long scramble. Or they perform their 15 scripted plays really well, and they jump out to a lead. That happens all the time in the NFL. But at this game, it didn't. There was never a point where the Rams were a threat to win this football game, and I don't know what else you can ask for but that.
Well, you want 52-10.
Sure.
I don't want the Chiefs playing their best football in that game.
Yeah.
I want them to play their best football against the Bengals this Sunday. I want them to play best football in the playoffs. Go ahead and methodically beat the Rams. And it's just we're all spoiled. We're just so spoiled. It's unbelievable. And I will say, Andy didn't pull back his play calling until the final 3 or 4 minutes when he knew, they can't do nothing on the other side. But prior to that, I mean, his offense was open. He was wide open. It's just Mahomes couldn't find guys open in the end zone. Or if he did, it got deflected. Or they ran a trick play that, was open but didn't throw to the right guy. And once again, give the Rams some credit. The Rams are paid to play defense. They did a pretty good job. They just have no offense themselves. All right, Chiefs at the Bengals coming up 2 o'clock pregame this Sunday. And the Chiefs right now still in the driver's seat for the number one seed. I love when people jump on the bandwagon every week and pick somebody other than the Chiefs to be the number one seed or somebody different to win the AFC West. And all these people be wrong over and over and over. I love it. Mike Greenberg saying, Baltimore, have you seen their schedule? They're going to be the number one seed. Have you seen the Chiefs' schedule? They have a game lead over Baltimore, and they have a weaker schedule than the Ravens. And then the Ravens went out and lost to Jacksonville. And their 4 losses, the Ravens have blown double-digit leads in every one of them. So you tell me they're a Super Bowl caliber team when they can't hold double-digit leads. That doesn't make sense with a team that runs the ball. Let's recap. Thanksgiving games, the Bills got a little bit fortunate. They beat the Lions. The Cowboys beat the Giants. Cowboys are 8-3. And the Vikings outlasted the Patriots. The Broncos are just a complete mess. They got defensive linemen now yelling at Russell Wilson. Melvin Gordon came out and said some things about the music that Russell Wilson makes the team listen to. It's really weird. I don't see how Hackett makes it after this year either. I'm okay with Hackett staying head coach in Denver, but I don't normally condone firing a guy after 1 year, but that's a train wreck. That's an absolute train wreck. He's supposed to be an offensive-minded guy, a great play caller. They got a big-time quarterback, and the Broncos can't score points.
Yeah. Let the patients run the asylum, right? Like, you got to Russ has way too much influence on what's going on there, and I think Hackett is not the guy to reel that in.
No.
When he's worked with him before, right? And he's just kind of letting him do that.
Russell Wilson has more bathrooms in his house than touchdown passes. 12-7. 12 bathrooms, 7 touchdown passes. Panthers beat the Broncos 23-10. The Buccaneers lost in overtime to the Browns, and it doesn't matter. Because the Bucs are in a horrible division. They're 5-6, still lead the division. 23-17 in overtime. The Jaguars were down and came back and went for 2 and the win with 14 seconds left, beat the Ravens. Ravens fall to 7-4, and now they're tied with the Bengals in their division, and you're sitting here telling me they're going to be number one seed in the Super Bowl team, Mike Greenberg. The Dolphins beat the Texans. Dolphins are 8-3. The Jets win behind their third-string quarterback, in essence, as Zach Wilson was Ryan Wilson? Or Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson.
I always want to mix that up. My oldest son makes fun of me when I do that. Bengals beat the Titans. That game ended on a penalty call by the officials. The Bengals were kicking a field goal, go up 23-16. Titans are going to get the ball with 1:50 to go and try to go score a game-tying touchdown. And the defensive player ran over the center, and that's a defenseless player, and that is a penalty. And that gave the Bengals a chance to just take a knee and take the 3 points off the board, and the game was over. I hate to see games decided like that. They both those teams 7-4. The same thing happened the Commanders-Falcons game. Did you see this one? Commanders were up 19-13. Falcons had first and goal at the 4. They were trying to milk some clock. The Commanders used all their timeouts, and the Falcons ran it, got like a yard. Then they threw a pass. It was wide open, but defensive lineman got his hand up, deflected it. Kendall Fuller, former Chief, dives, intercepts it in the end zone. So you're thinking Commanders win, right? So the Falcons have all 3 timeouts. And the Commanders, very conservative, run it 3 times. So now they punt. There's going to be about 45 seconds left. Falcons, it's a long shot, but they still have a chance to go get a touchdown, win the game, and then they'd be in first place in their division. Instead, they run into the punter, who did a nice little flop, and he did get landed on his foot. He's supposed to have a place to land, and the game was decided on the flag. So 2 games decided by a flag at the end of the game. If you believe in things being rigged, I'm just throwing it out there. All right, so Commanders win. They're 7-5. If the season ended today, the entire NFC East would be in the playoffs.
Yep.
And nobody else except division winners. The Chargers won on a 2-point try to beat the Cardinals, 25-24. Chargers needed that win badly. They're 6-5, still in the playoff hunt. Raiders beat the Seahawks 40-34 in overtime. Josh Jacobs, 86-yard run in OT. Chiefs beat the Rams 26-10, as we know. Chiefs are 9-2. And the Niners shut out the Saints 13-0. The Niners are scary because their defense is good and their offense didn't do a lot yesterday. It didn't have to. And that's what's scary. They can beat you in many ways. The Eagles beat the Packers. Rodgers has a broken thumb. Rodgers has a rib injury. Eagles, Jalen Hurts, he had a huge game. And so the Eagles beat the Packers. The Eagles are now 10-1. Packers are toast. Monday Night Football. I'm surprised it's not. Guess I don't know if they can flex out of that or not. Steelers at the Colts. Steelers 3-7. Colts 4-6-1. All right, college football over the weekend, and well, it was kind of the same old thing for the most part.
K-State with an opportunity to grab a lead of 3 scores if they can punch it in. This play is just so awesome. Oh my goodness, he walked in.
Well, not a lot of defense in the first quarter, or really in the first half for either team. K-State gets a 23-7 lead. They are helped out by a fumble on a punt return at the 5, scored the very next play on a jet sweep by Malik Knowles. And it's funny. Every time KU and K-State play, it seemed like KU always makes a special teams mistake, and K-State makes them pay for it. And K-State's just always better in special teams than Kansas. KU is special teams is ranked 128th out of 131 teams. Their defense is ranked 106th out of 131 teams. And this is why I picked the Wildcats to win by 21. We all had them win them comfortably. I had them by 21. They won by 20. 47-27. And the reason being is that KU's defense isn't nearly as good as K-State's. Now, K-State's defense wasn't great on Saturday. Wasn't great at all. No. But KU's defense was not good. Their special teams wasn't good. And KU then dug themselves a hole, and they had to battle back all night long. They cut it to 10 early in the fourth quarter, and that was as close as they'd get. Will Howard, efficient, did all of his damage in the first half, throwing the ball. Deuce Vaughn, 147 yards, and a touchdown. K-State wins for the 14th straight time over KU in the Sunflower Showdown. They're now 9-3. They move on to the Big 12 Championship game against TCU at 11 a.m. coming up this Saturday morning in Arlington. Here's Chris Klieman on clinching a berth in the Big 10 title game.
Our seniors stood the test of time today and rose up and made plays. So extremely thankful to be here, extremely blessed in our fourth season to get the opportunity to go to AT&T Stadium and represent this great school and university and football program, and our kids are so excited.
Well, they should be. Here's Lance Leipold on his defense, which gave up 55 to Texas and 47 to K-State.
Yeah, I thought we tackled better tonight, and you know, we made some plays, got some stops, but we just couldn't make them when we needed the key opportunity to get that one more possession back. And you know, credit K-State. You know, you can see they outplayed us in special teams and created some big plays, and we just couldn't get the key drive when we needed to.
All right, KU offensively is on the right path. There's no doubt. They've got weapons. Daniels will be back next year. They've got Devin Neal, Kai Thomas, unless he transfers. Maybe he'll get more accustomed to the offense. I mean, they've Hyshaw hopefully come back from injury. I mean, KU's got – they're okay offensively, at least it appears. Defensively, they've got a couple of playmakers, but they don't have a lot of depth on defense. That hurts them. Special teams, when you lack some depth, you really see it in special teams. KU's got to figure out a kicker that's worth a darn. I don't mean to be too mean, but when your kicker's kicking only 52% of his field goals that are good, you got to do something different. Now, that didn't cost them in this game in particular. You know, special teams, obviously returning kicks, they can't afford to fumble. It was kind of a tough play there. You slip on a wet surface. That's a tough break. But Kansas has to get better in special teams, and they clearly have to get better defensively. And so they're really good in one phase. They're not good in the other two. And considering that, it's really remarkable they are 6-6. It's remarkable they are going to a bowl. And they'll probably go to Liberty Bowl is what I've seen a lot of people talking about. They might play Missouri, possibly, although other people are saying that's not going to happen. So KU's had a heck of a year, man. I know it's disappointing they start 5-0 and you go 6-6. But if you said before the year KU's going to win 6 games, go to a bowl, you would have taken that a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. Nobody questions that at all.
No doubt. So they're 6-6. It's a major step forward for KU. They're not on K-State's level yet. They have closed the gap some. I think K-State fans would even admit that.
Oh, yeah,
that.
For sure.
KU's closed the gap against K-State, but they're not there yet. Now, maybe next year when they play in Lawrence, KU might knock K-State off, and they will be there, and they'll close the gap entirely. But as of now, K-State is still the better football program in the state of Kansas. Early in the year, people were thinking, KU was thinking, even K-State fans, I think, were thinking for a second, wait a minute, is KU better than us? No, you're not, because that's why it's a marathon, not a sprint. You let it play out, and KU is not as good as K-State. It was proven very clearly on Saturday that K-State is the more complete team, and KU has room to work. But the thing is, KU last year won 2 games. Now they went to 6. It's not going to happen overnight where they're going to go from 2-10 to 10-2, all right? you take steps in your progression. KU has taken a major step forward. Lance Leipold and his staff should get credit for that. And they know where they have to improve it. Clearly, defense has to get better and special teams has to get better. For K-State, you know, they have some key injuries in the secondary that I think has shown up, obviously, in the last few weeks. And that would be a concern going up against TCU. And if TCU gets their weapons back, Miller was back, their running back. They're getting Quentin Johnson back, who's a stud. I saw him just carve up KU's defense earlier this year. That's obviously tougher for them to defend. But overall, K-State, you know, did K-State – here's the thing. K-State didn't play their best game. They didn't have to. KU didn't play their best game either, by the way. And K-State won – by 20, KU made it interesting for a while, but K-State pretty much for the most part always had a two-score lead, and it really was never in doubt, but it was still entertaining.
One of the things I really feel like there's something to this, because I've seen it 3 weeks in a row now, where you talk about the defensive backfield, and I think that's one of the biggest issues with K-State's defense right now is they've got injuries. They've got guys out. Julius Brents goes out against Texas, right? They just get ran in the first half, but they figure it out at halftime. They make adjustments and fix it. Kobe Savage is out the next week. He's out with an injury. First half against West Virginia, they had some issues in the secondary without question.
Yeah.
Second half, held West Virginia and Tech, kind of figured it out. I think they need to see what the other team's doing.
Mm-hmm.
In this certain game, you can game plan all you want, but talk to high school coaches, right? They showed us nothing that we saw on film.
Right.
Like, they were doing completely different things than anything we'd seen, some of them even in the last 2 years on film. They just came out and did something different. So when you come out and in those games and understand that this team's going to take advantage of somebody that's not out there,
right,
which is Kobe Savage right now for the defensive backfield for K-State. And so that first game against West Virginia, and I think they needed to kind of figure out what Kansas was doing on Saturday as well. Mm-hmm. Once they did that, things got a heck of a lot better for the defense in the second half, and they were able to kind of reel some of that in. And you know, and that's how I think probably the thing I've been most impressed with about this K-State team this year is really second half adjustments, not just in these games, but most of the season, to where they kind of know, okay, we've seen what they're going to offer us. Now let's go beat it and let's go take care of it. Also, Felix is being double and triple teamed on like every play right now. Mm-hmm. And people are like, where'd Felix go? Well, there's three guys on him. He's not going to be at the quarterback every game when he's getting triple teamed, because there's times, every time that I'm about 90% of the time when I'm actually focused and keyed and looking at what Felix is doing, there's three and definitely two guys on him, or he's getting chipped by a running back if there's not a double team. And so it's tough, and I think that's where K-State has to make the adjustments, because their edge rush is not getting to the quarterback like it did maybe early in the season or even at times last year.
I know KU fans are bracing and go, could we have one game against K-State where we don't make a major mistake on special teams that happened early in this game? And it just seems like it ends up being a killer, and it was in this game. I mean, that's a different type of game, probably, if KU doesn't make that mistake.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was a three
KU
and out.
KU got a stop right off the bat.
Yeah, it was a three and out. They did not allow a single first down.
Yeah.
They had them in check, and then
give it right back.
I mean,
at the
Zentner
five.
Put a bomb him 55 yards in the air.
Yeah, Zentner punted well again.
Guys shouldn't have probably been running backwards in the rain trying to go field that punt,
probably
right? Look at this, like let it take a bounce inside the 10.
When will guys remember?
Maybe get a roll in.
Is this something I missed where they're told now you can field it inside the 5? I mean, dear, stand on the 9, stand on the 10. If it's over your head, you just sit there and let it go over your head.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then so many mistakes.
One play, and with the way the crowd was going to be, and everything just changes, just boom, on one single moment.
And you're behind the whole night then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a huge play. It really was. Big 12 wrap. Fourth-ranked TCU crushed Iowa State 62-14. TCU and K-State a rematch 11 a.m. in Arlington. Many people are saying TCU loses. They're still not in the playoff if they lose. I would argue that they should be, especially with what happened this weekend, but whatever. West Virginia beat Oklahoma State 24-19 in Stillwater. Texas Tech beat Oklahoma in overtime 51-48. OU had an 18-point lead and blew it. OU is 6-6. They're in danger of having a losing season if they don't win their bowl game. Assuming they're going to go to a bowl game and accept the invite, I would think they would, but who knows. Top 25, Georgia struggled for about a half, but they beat Georgia Tech. Ohio State, I'll tell you what, I'm glad I didn't bet any money. That's why I don't bet. I would have put significant money on FanDuel, DraftKings, whatever, that Ohio State was going to crush Michigan. And I'm watching the game, and Ohio State goes right down the field and scores a touchdown. I told my son, I said, this isn't even going to be close. Ohio State's going to win like 41-7. Nope. Michigan, I was surprised. Michigan got two gigantic long touchdown passes the first half when Ohio State controlled the game. with the time of possession and plays and everything. And then Michigan took it to Ohio State in Columbus, 45-23. Michigan, very impressive win, despite really not playing anybody all year long except for Penn State. LSU, you knew that you had a feeling they were going to have a game where they overlooked somebody, and I thought they might lose A&M because that would be A&M Super Bowl, their last game of the year, and A&M beat LSU 38-23. USC beat number 15 Notre Dame 38-27. Alabama beat Auburn. Clemson lost by one to South Carolina. What a week for Spencer Rattler in South Carolina. They beat Tennessee, number five. They beat Clemson, number eight. Clemson won 40 games in a row at home. That streak's over. Oregon, it seems like Oregon, Oregon State, there's always an upset in that one. And Oregon loses 38-34, so that knocks them out of the Pac-12 championship game. And then the Huskers beat Iowa on Friday, 24-17. They tried to blow it. Did they ever try to blow that game?
They tried.
But they held on because Iowa just is inept on offense, and they won the game. They did hire a new coach. More on that in a moment. So Huskers finished 4-8. That knocked Iowa out of the Big Ten championship game picture. And then Purdue had to beat Indiana, and they did. So Purdue is in the Big Ten championship game against Michigan. So here's your conference championship title game matchups. Friday night on Fox at 7 o'clock, it's Utah against USC. USC has a chance to avenge their only loss. They lost. I watched that game in Utah. It was really good in that one. It was in Utah, though. And Utah went for a two-point conversion to win the game, and they got it. So USC has a great – if they win, they're in the playoff. I don't think there's any doubt about it now.
No, there shouldn't be.
If they win, they're in, plus they avenge the only loss of the year. And Caleb Williams might now be the front runner for the Heisman after C.J. Stroud's team losing by 22 to Michigan. Saturday, conference title games, number 12, K-State, 9-3 against number 4, TCU, 12-0. That's 11 a.m. on ABC. College game day will be in Arlington. LSU will take on Georgia. Georgia's a 17-point favorite. That's at 3 o'clock on CBS. I'd be willing to bet LSU covers 17. Central Florida against Tulane, that's the AAC championship. Fresno State against Boise State, that's a championship game there. Purdue, Michigan at 7 o'clock primetime on Saturday. Michigan, a huge, huge favorite. Clemson, North Carolina for the ACC title. Both those teams lost this past week. North Carolina, NC State lost in double overtime. Clemson losing by one to South Carolina. So let's get through the scenarios here. Okay, so we agree if USC wins, then they're in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. TCU wins, they're clearly in.
Yeah.
All right. If Georgia wins, they're clearly in. And if Michigan wins, they're in. So it's simple, right? Michigan beats Purdue. They should. Michigan's favored by 16. Michigan should win. Georgia should win. TCU, K-State, I don't know. I've said all along K-State's going to beat them and ruin things for the Big 12. And I think USC will get past Utah a second time, although that's not a great matchup for USC. That's a tough game. But let me ask you this. What happens if Michigan loses to Purdue somehow? Let's say that USC wins, Georgia wins, TCU beats K-State. Michigan loses to Purdue, but they're 12-1. Who gets the four spot?
See, I think Michigan gets lucky that LSU lost that that game.
I'd argue Michigan should still be in the playoffs.
It would be them and Ohio State,
and they'd just be Ohio State by 22 at Iowa State, Ohio State's house.
I don't think that you can – you absolutely can't put Ohio State ahead of Michigan. I
agree.
You can't do it. Like, if they do it, I'm going to be real frustrated, and if I was a Michigan fan, I'd be really, really, really frustrated and screaming at the top of my lungs. But, yeah, in that weird scenario that would happen, you just – Michigan's got that spot over Ohio State.
We all agree if Michigan loses to a four-loss unranked Purdue team that they still should be in the playoff.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. But Chris Peterson and other people have said the problem for TCU is, yeah, maybe they could lose and still be in the playoff, but the problem for TCU is they would be losing to a three-loss team. Whoa, let's rewind a little bit. So they're not going to punish Michigan for losing to an unranked four-loss team, but they'll punish TCU for losing to the 12th best team in the country in K-State? See the contradiction?
Who's actually probably going to be in the top 10 when the college football playoff rankings come out this week.
Possibly
K-State
so.
Probably will be based
Which
on
helps
the losses that happen, so that definitely helps TCU.
See, to me it's simple. To me, I think it's already done. I think Georgia's locked their spot. I think TCU should already have their spot locked up. I think Michigan should already have their spot locked up. And I think the only wild card is if USC wins or not. And if USC loses, then the fourth spot goes to... What happens if USC loses?
then maybe you go back to Ohio State.
You go to Ohio State, or you got beat by 22?
Or yeah, Alabama. if Michigan wins in that in your scenario there, then and then if TCU loses.
No, I'm saying if TCU, Michigan, loses, and Georgia win, and USC loses.
Yeah, if USC loses.
Who's in?
Ohio State.
Is in after losing by 22.
Yeah, I think that's the spot that's left.
I think because that's where they of go. The LSU
Clemson loss. Wait a minute. Hold on. What about Alabama? And I'm not proposing Alabama, but Alabama's two losses on the last play of each game. You don't think there's going to be a lot of talk about Alabama getting in over Ohio State? Ohio State didn't go to the conference title game. Alabama didn't go to the conference title game. Neither one won their division. Ohio State got drilled at home, and Alabama lost on the final play. And yes, they have one more loss. I think there's going to be a lot of talk and argument and controversy about Alabama over Ohio State.
Those are the only two choices at that with that
if
scenario.
USC loses,
right. And so, but I just think the one extra loss that LSU, you know, if Georgia wins, LSU is now a 4-loss team.
Well, LSU's out no matter what.
But I'm saying that's the team. That's one of the teams that beat Alabama. Right. So LSU is now a 4-loss team, and then Tennessee has that extra upset loss of South Carolina. So now I don't think those losses look as great for Alabama. It just so happened that some other teams fell. You know, I think if Oregon and or Clemson would have won, there's a potential that those teams would have jumped Alabama at some point. But, you know, they didn't. So, you know, but I think those are the only two arguments, and I think you have to go back to Ohio State.
I'll give you one more scenario. Sure. One more scenario. So Georgia's got a spot no matter what, okay? And LSU, if they win, they don't have a spot. They have three losses now, so they're done. Okay, so Michigan wins. They do what they're supposed to do. Georgia takes care of business. TCU and USC both lose. Now who's your third and fourth team?
Ohio State and Alabama.
Wow, that didn't take much. Yeah. Alabama's in over one loss. I'm just saying it out there. TCU goes undefeated, conference title game, loses to a top 10 team who have a rematch against. Alabama doesn't have to play. Alabama has one more loss than TCU, and you automatically put Alabama in. And Ohio State, who also has one loss by 22, and let's assume K-State beats TCU in a close game.
Ohio State
gets crushed at home by 22. Alabama loses two games, and TCU is going to be on the outside looking in because they made the conference title game. They're getting absolutely punished, and Alabama, Ohio State are benefiting by not being good enough to be in their title game, and TCU's being punished for being good enough to have a rematch against a team they beat already. That is such crap.
Yes, I think
not what,
in
what
this
we
scenario,
think should happen,
but if that's there, probably what will happen.
I think in this one, in this case, if there are two openings, like you know.
I
still think TCU gets one.
I don't.
If TCU
and USC lose, this is not different than what we've talked about the last 3 weeks. It's TCU's got to win this game to get in.
But they shouldn't have to.
No, they shouldn't. And I'm not saying that I agree with what I'm saying.
Their strength of schedule, all the metrics. I will say this, though. And I was surprised to see it. But somebody said TCU doesn't deserve it to be in a playoff. And Reese Davis. Now, this is important that some of the talking heads do this. Reese Davis,
absolutely,
who hosts College Game Day, they're going to be. And by the way, the ESPN Game Day is going to be at the Big 12 championship game, which I think is a very interesting thing to note here.
Yeah.
Okay? And so I think there might be a little bit of momentum towards, hey, TCU deserves to be in there even if they lose this game, because their strength of schedule is way better than any. It's better than Alabama's. It's better than Ohio State's. They have 8 wins over 500 teams or better. They have more signature wins. I mean, TCU has the better resume than Alabama, Ohio State, any of these teams that we're talking about. Better than USC as well if they were tied all together. Better than Michigan, okay? Michigan's got the glossy big win, recency bias, if you want to call it that. But Reese Davis defended TCU and said, listen, are you aware that TCU has the best strength of schedule of all the teams you just mentioned? Yeah. That this guy was arguing was better than TCU. And I haven't seen anybody with that type of platform and stature at ESPN say anything like that until now. And Reese Davis hosts College Game Day. So I do think there is a chance, and maybe I'm naive, maybe Jason and I are naive, but I think there is a little bit of a growing momentum to, hey, wait a minute. If TCU loses in a close, tight game to K-State, how can they possibly be out if there's two spots available? How do you knock them completely out in favor of a team that didn't make the conference title game, didn't win the division, and lost twice, and a team that just got their butt smoked at home?
Right.
I mean, logic tells you TCU should lose and still be in. Logic tells you Michigan should lose and still be in. But based on everything we've seen over the years, Dusty, I agree with you that I understand what you're saying, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's what happens. I do think I'm a little bit more optimistic, and maybe I'm a fool, but I'm a little bit more optimistic, as long as TCU doesn't get run out of the building, that there are scenarios where they could still be in this playoff.
I wouldn't have said this 2 weeks ago.
It does help if K-State moves up in the rankings, though.
It helps that K-State moves up, but I wouldn't have said this 2 weeks ago. I wouldn't have said this before Tennessee lost to South Carolina, and I wouldn't have said this before LSU lost in their game. Not that LSU or Tennessee necessarily jump, but those are two losses that go against Alabama's strength of schedule and stuff. And so I think that will be the help that gets TCU in over Alabama this year. Now, I you're right, Dusty. More times than not, obviously, this is going Alabama's way. I just have this feeling that this year it's going to go TCU's way. If this scenario, I mean, who knows?
But does there have to be two spots open, though, for them to lose at the end?
I kind of think so.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If TCU loses and USC wins, TCU's out of there.
Yeah. Because Ohio State would take their spot. Right. Yeah. Yep. So really, chance TCU has of losing would be if there's two open spots and they get in ahead of Alabama as two losses.
Yeah, TCU, either one of those teams that loses, Ohio State's taking that spot.
Right. Yep. But if they both lose,
which
one?
I think it's going to be
TCU above USC. USC have two losses. They'd be out.
I think TCU gets in over Alabama even if they lose.
Okay.
I don't.
Has to be close, though, probably?
Yes. If it's 55-10, all bets are off.
But I've said this for 3 weeks. Yeah. I think K-State's going to spoil the party.
I do, too.
They're going to screw it all up. Yep. They're going to screw it all up for the conference. And if you're a K-State fan, you're happy with screwing it up because you are Big 12 conference champions. Right. And we've seen Baylor screw it up for Oklahoma State last year. It's happened many times. K-State, we thought, screwed it up for OU in 03. They didn't in that situation, but they kind of could have. But we've seen this. I mean, A&M screwed it up for K-State in 98. We know that. These conference title games, we said it at the time when the Big 12 said, listen, there's no need for us to have a conference title game. We play a round robin. Then they got punished when they couldn't declare a champion. TCU would have dropped from 3-6 after winning by 52 points, and Ohio State won by 50, and they moved up mysteriously ahead of TCU. You know what TCU fans are thinking right now? We have to win because we're going to get hosed again, and Ohio State's going to jump us again, and it's almost the same scenario, except the difference is Ohio State is in the clubhouse and posted their score and doesn't have any danger or fear of losing another game, whereas TCU's got to play a rematch that they shouldn't have to play.
Right.
But because of the extra data point, and we said at the time, it's going to help you some years and it's going to kill you some years. And we predicted at the time it's going to hurt you more than it's going to help you. And here we are. Ohio State is sitting here going, all we need is K-State to beat TCU and we're in.
Yeah. The number next to
K-State. And we lost by 22!
Yeah. Listen, it's the same thing we've been talking about all year with TCU. The number next to K-State's not going to matter because they're K-State. If it was a number next to Oklahoma for TCU and they lost this game, it might matter. But then when TCU and Kansas State are the two teams that are representing the Big 12 in that game, neither one of them are Oklahoma or Texas, there's an automatic bias toward that. The league's not good because TCU and K-State were the top two teams. It can't be. If Oklahoma and Texas aren't in the top, this is a trash league this year. Nobody cares about it. This is what we've been talking about for 3-4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to come to fruition because I don't care if K-State's ranked number 8, 9, 10. I don't think that matters in the mind of the people that are going to make this decision. When there's a one-loss TCU team that just lost, and Alabama's last impression was a blowout win in the Iron Bowl.
Ohio
Auburn.
State just lost, too.
Yeah, got the name and they have one loss, right? And that was two.
Right.
A Big Ten championship champion that's undefeated.
Right.
Now, Alabama's obviously Ohio State's got a better case than Alabama, one because they only have one loss.
Right.
But even in the scenario where maybe USC would lose, then obviously they've got two now, and Ohio State's got that spot. There's just so many things that go into it, but I don't – listen, it should help TCU that K-State is going to be in the top 10 probably this week, but I don't think it will.
It also would have helped them if K-State wouldn't have lost to Tulane.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
It would also help K-State. There's actually K-State a scenario could they could have been considered for the playoff if they hadn't lost to Tulane.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's on coaching there.
I'll say it this way.
They played that to not show anything before they played OU.
If TCU loses, I still think they get in over Alabama with the scenarios, but I would bet on it I wouldn't put money on it.
I wouldn't put money
on it. I think that's what's going to happen, but I wouldn't.
Listen, and what you're going to hear is all the people that don't want to see TCU in this game because of their name. And they're going to be all this talk, and that's why it's been put out the last 3 or 4 weeks. They're already setting the stage to try to set everybody up to say, once TCU loses, they're eliminated. There's a few starting to say, what if they lose? Should they still be in because of what happened this weekend? Mm-hmm. Clemson got knocked out. Ohio State got rolled. You know, obviously, you've got a few teams that were knocked off here recently. Tennessee got beat a couple weeks ago. LSU lost, mm-hmm. of course. So it does open the door to where TCU might have a little leeway, but you can't chance it, obviously.
No.
But we'll see the new playoff rankings come out, what, tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, yep.
So we'll see how far K-State is on that ranking. I will say, if TCU could say we beat a top 10 team in our conference title game, well, obviously they win, but K-State being higher in the rankings should help TCU a little bit, no doubt, in the metrics. But once again, put the blind resume out there and then pick your four teams. Mm-hmm. Put the blind resume out there, pick your four teams. Don't put the logo next to it. And I guarantee you TCU's in with – I guarantee if you put the resumes together blindly right now, TCU wouldn't even be the third – they'd be number two in the country.
Oh,
they
wouldn't.
They'd be ahead of Michigan. And if you had a blind resume, TCU would already have guaranteed themselves a spot in the playoff just like Georgia has.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, TCU should be exactly like Georgia. They should feel comfortable no matter what, they're in the playoff. That's how TCU should feel. But it isn't because they're not OU or Texas.
Yeah, all three of those teams that are undefeated right now should be in.
Michigan should, too.
On a blind resume,
they should be in.
On a blind resume,
yes.
No matter what happens, there's all three of those teams' spots should be locked in the playoff. Right.
Agreed. Agreed. Now, think of it. If these teams hold serve, Georgia wins, TCU wins, USC wins, and Michigan wins, then seeding-wise, I don't think there's any doubt that USC would have to be four because they have a loss.
Yeah. Right.
So, and then Michigan would be two, probably. I could argue TCU could be two. It don't really matter. TCU and Michigan would be your playoff semifinal in Georgia-USC. Listen, I don't mind that if I'm TCU.
No.
I don't mind it. No. And I'm getting tired of hearing people say, well, TCU get blown out in the playoff. Oh, just like Clemson got blown out before, just like Ohio State got blown out before, like Notre Dame got blown out multiple times before, Michigan State got blown out before, OU's got blown out before. Well, OU's got blown out multiple times. Well, though TCU's not OU, okay? It's ridiculous. TCU should have their shot. Everybody said Cincinnati's going to get blown out of the building. Cincinnati did better than Notre Dame did against Alabama in some of these situations, all right? So, no, TCU is a separate entity that deserves their opportunity. Should they win this weekend, and I argue they should be in no matter what now. But, of course, we know that's not true.
It's also college football 2022, right? It's not like 1984, you know. So the games are faster. There's more plays. There's all this stuff. All the, you know, the games, there's more apt to be a blowout in 2022 than there is, you know, 30 years ago. So I don't care about the blowout thing so much. But, you know, obviously you'd want them to have close games. But, you know.
I think that they're all going to be pretty good game. Well, I don't know. LSU-Georgia is a weird one. And then Purdue-Michigan. I think that's a dangerous game for Michigan. Purdue's got all – they can be loose as a goose. And Michigan could probably even be sitting there talking like we are. Like, if we lose, we still should be in.
Right.
And – they just came off the emotional butt-kicking of Ohio State in Columbus. So I think it sounds crazy to call a conference title game a trap game, but it kind of is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it.
Because Purdue's just going to sling it all over the field.
Yeah, they will.
If they get hot, you know.
They'll be on turf.
Right?
Yeah. It all starts Friday. USC wins, then TCU probably has to win. If USC loses, TCU may, and we say may. Dusty doesn't think they do, but Jason, I think there may be a little leeway they get that fourth spot still. We shall see. It's a joke. They all should be in. All those teams we mentioned should be in.
Yeah.
12-team playoff. K-State would be in. Yeah. Anywho. The Huskers, as we mentioned, won, and they've got a new head coach, Matt Rhule. He signs an 8-year contract to coach Nebraska. From the very beginning, I remember mentioning Matt Rhule as the guy I would hire because he's on the hot seat at Carolina. He's done a great job at Temple, great job at Baylor, turned the programs around. He'd be my first call if he gets fired. As soon as he got fired, we're like, here you go. And then all of a sudden, people are like, not so warm about it. And even some Husker fans are like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, what is there not to know about this? And then there were a lot of talk that Rhule was out. And then Rule had to decide between two schools. It was between Auburn, possibly, and Nebraska. He likes Nebraska better. And part of it was trying to take care of the $34 million the Panthers owe Matt Rule with his contract after they fired him. And I don't know exactly officially all the numbers that Nebraska is paying Rule, because some say that they offset and help pay some of this for Carolina to get him away from there, yeah, even though he was fired. Who knows? Bottom line is Matt Rule's a new head coach. He was 47-43 in college. Not good in the pros, but who cares? Nick Saban was no good in the pros either, and that worked out pretty well when he came back. He's turned around Temple, he turned around Baylor, 11-3 in his final year with the Bears in 2019. Press conference scheduled for today to introduce Matt Rule to next head coach at Nebraska. If he can turn around at Temple and he can turn around at Baylor, and he plays in the weaker division, the Big Ten, he should be able to turn around Nebraska, and he'll have all the resources at disposal than he's ever had before. I know people said the same thing when Frost was hired. The difference was Frost wasn't coaching at a Power 5 university. Right. He did it at Central Florida, and that was his first main head coaching job. This guy, Matt Rule, has done it at two different institutions, Temple and then Baylor in the Big 12, when Baylor was a mess. If he can do it there, why the heck can't he do it in Nebraska?
To me, it seems like the right move.
I think it's a no-brainer.
Right. For Nebraska, it's definitely the right move. Yeah. I think the whole contention the whole time was, does Matt Rule want to come to Nebraska?
Right, yeah, that was my only worry.
There's been Husker fans that say they're not all sold on him. But
No. And especially like what the day after Wisconsin getting Luke Fickell.
Yeah,
you could argue Luke Fickell's the bigger name, more accomplished lately.
I would rather have Matt Rule.
I would too. If you're in Nebraska situation, you're not worried about winning the big game yet.
No,
you're worried about getting turned around. You're closer to Temple
and Baylor.
You're closer to Temple than you are Cincinnati at this point.
Yes,
and you're closer to the trash that Baylor was at that time. And you know, Baylor had some other things going on off the field and stuff like that, that Baylor was just a dumpster fire at that point. So Nebraska, you have to admit it. That's the problem. You have to admit it. You're closer to Temple and bad Baylor than are Cincinnati at this point. So don't worry about Luke Fickell and what he does in big games and getting teams to a playoff or whatever. You need the guy to turn it around. And I know some of the contention is his overall record isn't very good. His bowl record's not very good. We'll worry about that down the line.
Well, first of all, his overall record's not good because he inherited two
bad teams. Yeah.
The trash programs at the time.
Right. Yeah, that's
you look at
Mark Mangino's overall record at KU is barely above 500. His second to last year, he was 11-1 and won the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, I understand it.
I got that. Other from people, some people that were talking that's about people it. He's that like, don't, he's four t- games above 500.
Tell me you don't know anything about college football without telling me you don't know anything about college football.
Right. Yes.
Just all you got to do is go on to Wikipedia, type in Matt Rule head coaching record, and look where it's 1-11.
Where were they before
4-8 and 11-3?
By the way, Carolina didn't sit here and go, "Oh no, he's only four games over 500." Where hire him as an NFL head coach.
Yeah. Right.
So that should tell you something. Well, he failed as an NFL head coach. The fact that he was hired to be an NFL coach tells you how good he was
in college.
He's
so good so fast that he can't build a college record, right? Because he goes to Temple, starts there, and Temple has terrible football history, right?
Oh, yeah.
And turns them around, gets them going bowling, and then all of a sudden he goes to Baylor, and he's only there for 3 years, right? And then the Panthers are calling saying, "Hey, we want you," or three or four, whatever it was at Baylor. But, the progression – with coaches like this, if they're getting a high Power 5 job and they're only four games above 500 as a college coach, you might dive a little bit deeper into what
well,
actually happened.
Let's dive deeper into this, okay? Matt Rule at Temple, first year, he inherited a dumpster fire. First year, 2-10. You got to take a little time to get your guys, right? Second year, 6-6. Gee, who does that sound like? Lance Leipold in Kansas, 2-10, 6-6. Third year at Temple, 10-4, got to a bowl game. Fourth year in Temple, final year at Temple, 10-3, lost a bowl game. First year at Baylor, 1-11. Second year, 7-6. He went from 1-11 to 7-6 at Baylor, and then 11-3. In 2 years, he went from one win to 11. And you're going to look at his overall record? Come on, Husker fans. You're really insulting your own intelligence here. Because that is one of the dumbest comments you possibly could ever make. Well, he's only four games over 500. I don't want that guy. Oh, okay. But you want Mickey Joseph? I mean, Mickey Joseph's under 500 as well. People, he's under 500 as an interim head coach. I mean, he's won two games. So, two or three games, whatever it was. So two, actually. So he went from 2 to 6 to 10. In a span of 3 years, he went from 2 to 10 wins at Temple, and he went from 1 to 11 in 3 years at Baylor. He goes to Nebraska. This is the best situation he's ever had. He inherits a 4-8 team.
It's the best start.
He could go from 4-8 to 8-4 maybe next year.
Yes, it's – yeah, and I – like I said, you're closer to them than you are than absolutely. Cincinnati or bowl or playoff. So you have to get turned around. Now, if in 3 years he gets it turned around and then he starts not winning bowl games or whatever, then you can worry about that later. But
we won 9 games. Let's fire a coach again.
But let's just get turned around first. Yes, that's the number one. The money, it's a lot. But like you said, we don't know.
You and I ain't paying for it.
Right, right. We don't know who's paying how much. And that was my worry, was Matt Rhule would say, you know what? I don't want to do this for a year. I don't want to do this right now. There might be other jobs that come open next year. I have the security to wait. And so that was my worry, but it wasn't his record. It wasn't anything like that. It was whether he was willing to come. And if he was, great. I don't think Nebraska could have done any better. I know there were people that were saying Urban Meyer and this.
There
and
was never traction.
But
there,
Urban Meyer
way.
Was never going to do it. And Nebraska, I don't think, was ever going to hire him anyway. So that was, you know, that's the pipe dream, whatever. Right. That's the weird pipe dream.
Nebraska's close to hiring, according to reports today, Nebraska's close to hiring South Carolina offensive coordinator Marcus Satterfield as the school's new offensive coordinator. Satterfield worked with Matt Rhule at Temple, Baylor, and the Panthers. South Carolina's offense scored 94 points in wins over Tennessee and Clemson. Now, they also have Spencer Rattler, who's a pretty talented quarterback, mm-hmm. who's finally starting to come into his own. So that's the first step, Matt Rhule. He's got to find a quarterback. Yep. He's got to have the quarterback he wants. If Matt Rhule comes in and gets a stud quarterback to come to Nebraska, you are going to be better than 4-8 going into next year. You'll be better. You'll probably be a bowl eligible team. That's the first step, no doubt, is have and recruit and get a quarterback. We've talked about KU now suddenly is better. No surprise they're better because they finally have a guy that's a decent quarterback. That's always the key. When you go any program, you got to find the quarterback. You find the quarterback, now you can build around it. So that's going to be number one, I guarantee you. Number one for Matt Rhule is putting together a great staff. Number two, let's go get a quarterback. I will guarantee you that. So I think it's a great hire for Nebraska. I think Wisconsin did fine with Luke Fickell, although a lot of people are very surprised Jim Leonard didn't get the job. Mm-hmm. Jim Leonard now is probably available, and there's rumors out there Nebraska should go throw a ton of money at Jim Leonard to be their defensive coordinator and stick it to Wisconsin since they're in the same division. That would be quite the coaching staff. You have Satterfield as OC, Leonard as DC, and you have Rhule at the head coach. It's amazing if you make the right hires how quickly your program can turn around.
I don't know with how much money Rhule is going to make, and Satterfield, I'm sure, is not cheap. There are people that want to keep Mickey Joseph on staff. Now, whether he wants to or not, I don't know. That's up to him, but he's going to come with the raise to be whatever, you know.
Hey, if you care about football, head coach, you're going to spend all the money you need. Yep. Donors will come up with it.
Yeah, so I don't know if Leonard will be an expensive defensive coordinator. So we'll see if that comes to fruition or if, you know, Matt Rhule probably has a list of guys that he's worked with before. I'm not saying that that's a bad idea. No, I
don't think Leonard's going to come to Nebraska's DC. No. And that's just my opinion. So anyway, Nebraska's new head coach, and we all think it's probably a good hire. Of course, everybody thought Scott Frost was a great hire, too. But there's a longer track record with Matt Rhule and where he's been. He's been a winner wherever he's been except in the pros. And, you know, Nick Saban wasn't a winner there either.
Right.
MIAA teams are eliminated from postseason contention. Unfortunately, my Pittsburgh State Gorillas lost at Ferris State 17-14. They forced 5 turnovers and still lost.
Oh.
That's amazing. Northwest Missouri State lost to Grand Valley State 13-8. KU Hoops upset by number 22 Tennessee 64-50 in the Bahamas. And the third-ranked Jayhawks back at home in Lawrence tonight, although they'll fall in the rankings when they come out. The Jayhawks 6-1 host 1-6 Texas Southern. At Allen Fieldhouse, Jayhawks and Tigers tip off 7 o'clock tonight, pregame at 6:30 on Z96.3 Lake. The clear thing to me with KU, and I said this last week when we were talking about the Jayhawks, is after Jalen Wilson and Grady Dick, and Grady Dick's a freshman, okay, keep that in mind, and Grady Dick's off to a great start this year, although struggled the last couple games at the Bahamas, he also needs to improve defensively, and he knows that. But KU has to find a third scorer. And McCuller is a, he can score, but he's not really a scorer. They need to find a third offensive weapon. And right now, DeJuan Harris is never, Harris is an outstanding defensive player, a great leader, good point guard, but he is not an offensive player. Bobby Pettiford, who had the amazing game-winning layup at the end of the game to beat Wisconsin in the semifinals, he is not an offensive player, and he's out for weeks now with a hamstring. And Yasufu is a guy that can score at times, but he's been inconsistent. He's going to play more as the second point guard now, the backup to Harris. And Harris couldn't stay out of foul trouble last couple of games in Bahamas. That's also got to be a bit of a concern. They got rolled by Tennessee. They're lucky to score 50. And that was the lowest amount KU scored in 8 years. This KU team, to me, is challenged offensively because they need Grady Dick to hit a whole bunch of threes, and they need Jalen Wilson to score 25 to 35. And that is not a recipe for long-term success. So somebody, maybe MJ Rice, maybe the Uday kid can be the post guy they need inside. They have no post offense whatsoever. So you're relying on Wilson to drive it and score, slash and score. McCullers to do that. Some spot up threes from McCuller, who's not a great 3-point shooter. He's okay. You need Grady Dick to be really, really good almost every night. That's a lot to ask of a young 18, 19-year-old freshman who has some deficiencies defensively, but I think he'll get better. And so Kansas has got some questions, no doubt, offensively. And if Jalen Wilson has an off game, as he did against Tennessee, look what happened. They scored 50.
Yep.
Jalen Wilson right now, there's too much on his plate to carry this team. And there's a lot on the freshman Grady Dick's plate as well. McCuller can be the third guy. At times he has been. But they've got to find a legitimate third scorer on this team. And I think MJ Rice could be that guy, but that's a freshman. Ernest Uday could be that guy. That's a freshman. KJ Adams is not going to be an offensive player. I don't know if they're going to find that third offensive player. And the second part is, really, they ideally want to be that third offensive scoring threat. Needs to be a post. Because they don't get tons of easy baskets in the half court, that's for sure.
Right. And as you get into conference play, you're not going to have those size mismatches as often. So,
well, yeah, he's playing five guards almost.
Right, right. So it's going to be interesting to see if what they can do. That's why teams schedule these types of games. This, you know, kind of after the holiday or Thanksgiving tournament and into conference play. But it'll be interesting. You know, it could be worse. You know, Grady Dick could be just a freshman right now and haven't grown into it. I mean, he's still going to have his off and on nights, but I trust that Bill Self will figure it out. You know, we talk about, in a way, the Chiefs lost Tyreek Hill, you know, Jayhawks lose all this talent to the NBA. You know, it's going to look different. But you trust Bill Self to kind of figure it out more than other coaches.
Wichita State picked up victory over Tarleton, 83-71. They're 4-2. K-State men are 6-0. They won the Grand Cayman tourney over LSU. They're at Butler on Wednesday. K-State women suffer their first loss of the season, losing to Arkansas 69-53. Former K-State Wildcat Chrissy Carr at 18 to lead Arkansas. K-State now 7-1. Gabby Gregory at 35 against Clemson, had just 5 points on Saturday because she had a rolled her ankle and missed some time, and so that's something to watch. KU women are 5-0. They beat St. Mary's 73-53. In the World Cup, USA and Iran tomorrow at noon. USA must win to move on to the group of a 16, a round of 16. If it's a tie or they lose, they are eliminated. So no more ties. Thank God!
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.